You're listening to a podcast from 702.
702. Nola knows her knowledge is your power.
Hi, Wendy. How are you doing?
Hello, Rebekile. I'm just fine. Thanks. Good to be with you again.
Yes. What do you think of there being a new party, or just does not affect your consumer rights life?
Well, sadly, it doesn't. They don't really seem to take on consumer issues, the kinds that I'm involved with. I don't get too much, feedback from political parties saying, "Oh, that I listen to that. Well, I really want to take up that issue of yours." It doesn't happen, sadly. It's not really on the radar.
I feel you on that one.
And I'm old enough to have seen so many parties come and go, and at this stage, until things start to happen and they start showing us what they are about rather than telling us what they're about, then I'm just like, okay, let's see.
So no, we'll comment. Wait for the actions to speak louder than the words, and
yes,
see how that goes.
Yes.
Let's jump into the very first issue for today.
Okay, so the fact is that theft of cars from dealerships, when you take your car to a dealership to get service, to get something replaced, to have it, other workshops where they worked on, I haven't had those complaints. It's always cases I've dealt with are about cars being stolen from dealerships in all sorts of ways. It's not uncommon at all, sadly, in our South African landscape. So you would think that there would be very tight policies and protocols around ensuring that somebody doesn't walk off the street into the dealership, grab some keys, and find the car. We can all do that, hey? Press the remote and see what flashes or beeps. And off you go through the security, past the security guard. You would say, you assume that all that is in place. But you would be wrong in many cases. And then another assumption you might have is that if your car gets stolen because there was a lack of security measures, you'd think that they'd say, oh gosh, let us put this right. We'll find another car for you or whatever. But no, and when the cases that I've dealt with anyway, and of course things come to me when consumers feel they've had a raw deal, it's almost always the same thing. First of all, just claim on your insurance. And if the consumer pushes back, I mean, why wouldn't they? Then it's like, okay, we'll pay your excess. Be happy. Run along now. It's all good. No. Oh, then it's, as we'll see in today's case, but look at our terms and conditions of this document that you signed when you bought your car in. It says, whatever happens, we're not liable. No, you cannot contract outside of the law. The Consumer Protection Act very much makes it your problem if you fail to safeguard a customer's property in a professional way while you have it. So that brings us to our case study. Last week, some listeners might have seen this. Justice Mariba took to social media, Twitter, to relate in a long thread how his car was stolen from a Gauteng dealership. He'd been told that the best the dealership could do was for him was to pay that insurance excess. They expected him to claim on his insurance policy. And so I think I was tagged in. I must have been. And I've investigated so many of these cases, so I was immediately interested. I made contact with Justice. And so from there began a series of conversations between the two of us and between me and Hyundai South Africa about what happened. The Hyundai Four Ways dealership on Tuesday, the 28th of February. So just to, before we bring him in to join us, just to summarize what went down, Justice and his partner dropped his grand i10 off to have the battery replaced. He had bought the car, incidentally, new at the end of 2021 from another Hyundai dealership. So it wasn't yet 2 years old. He was expecting and was told that he was going to get the car back that day. I mean, it's just having the battery replaced after all. But he found out when he called the dealership towards the end of the day that it wasn't ready. In fact, they were still awaiting approval from head office for the warranty replacement. So the car would have to spend the night at the dealership and they would get going the next morning. Not a great thing, especially as he had to phone to find that out. But anyway, he was at least credit to the dealership for this. He was given the use of a courtesy car. At about 2:30 the next day, a consultant from the dealership called Justice to say that the car would be ready for collection at about 3:30. He, of course, was working. So he said, I'll come after work. I'll get there just before 5, which he did. He had to wait a bit because the consultant was dealing with a couple of other customers. And when it was his turn, well, the consultant called him over to his desk. He took out the papers, which Justice had to sign. And he says, your car's outside. It's ready for collection. Okay, this is just around 5 o'clock, right? And then this consultant, this employee in the service department starts looking for the keys on his desk. I can just picture this. But I think this is a good time to bring Justice in and let him tell us how things went down from that frantic, where are the keys? They were here. Where are the keys? What happened to the keys? They must be here.
Hi, Justice.
What happened
how are you?
To that?
Hi, everyone.
So you came into the dealership and they were looking for your keys, and then what happened?
Yeah, the consultant was looking for the keys, and he started walking around the dealership asking his colleagues if they've seen the key, and no one had seen the key. So he comes back and he goes to where the car was parked, which is outside ready for collection, and the car is not there. See them walking in numbers now. They went to the gates. At that time, I'm still waiting with the papers so that I can sign, waiting for the keys. They haven't told me that the car is gone. It's stolen. And they go to the gate. They come back to me. And that's when they told me that, actually, your car seems to be missing here. Please check on your tracker where the car could be. And that's when we start checking on the tracker. The tracker is not updating. We call the tracker. They also couldn't find the car. And then they told us that so that the tracker was removed. Or it has been jammed, or maybe there's a problem with the network due to load shedding. So the car cannot be found basically.
So how did you must have been able to establish from the security guard at the gate. How long before you got there had your car been driven off by this stranger?
So I left just a few minutes before 5, so from my estimation, it would be about less than 5 minutes. The person left at the gate, the picture when it was taken, it was around 10 to 5.
Okay.
That was few
and what
minutes
papers
before,
were they?
Before I got them.
Yes. Sorry to interrupt you, Justice. What papers were you asked to sign? Were they just financial things, or was there some sort of document for security purposes at the gate?
Yeah, so the papers were just to document what has been done to the car, and that I'm saying that I'm collecting the car, right? So my understanding that would have been the paper that I would have taken to the security for them to let me through with the car.
Okay. So now, obviously, there's great consternation and drama happening. What happened next? What does the dealership say? Was there any initial sense that they were going to take responsibility, or was it all about you go and report it, you file a claim with your insurance, kind of, this is nothing to do with us? Or how did that play out right at the beginning then when it was everyone became aware that the car was gone?
Yeah, so at that point, we agree that the car has been stolen, right? So there's a dealership principal, there's the consultant, and few other people that actually work there. And we agreed that we need to report this as a matter of a stolen car. So what the dealership principal suggested was, he's going to open up a case on his side. He will let insurance know of this incident, but for safety, to be safe, he said that I should also just go to the police station and report them, and possibly just let my insurance know that there is something like this that has happened. But he would claim on his side, and it shouldn't be a problem. And then they would deal with it, and they'll do an internal investigation from that point.
Okay, so initially you thought, okay, they're going to take care of this.
Yeah, initially everything seems to be fine, that the car has been stolen, and then they will claim from the insurance, and we'll resolve that. No big deal then. That's what I thought. Oh, that's what we
okay, and when did...
yeah.
Yeah, and when did it kind of degenerate from there to the point that actually you signed this clause and it's not our fault, and you're on your own.
So it was a few days later. The case hasn't been opened yet, right? I go to the police station, right? So at first time we went to the police station the day the car was stolen, just to report the matter, and they said that we needed some papers that we didn't have at that point in time. So I had to go back and get those papers, all of them. So we get the papers, we go back to the police station to open up a case, and that is the time when they opened. They told us that we can't really open a case. The dealership has to open a case because they have to be a complainant. The complainant is their responsibility. The car was stolen under their care, right? Which I informed that the dealership had done. And so almost after a week after that, so he sends us a case number, right? After a week, he sends us a case number to say, this is the case number. The matter has been reported to the police station. However, due to the terms and conditions that you have signed, we won't be taking responsibility of this loss. So we'd advise that you claim from your insurance.
And then when did this sort of, okay, we'll pay your excess, how did that happen?
So I after that, right? So I take the number that he gave us, and I took it to the police station, and just to find out, and turned out the case number was invalid. That number was just bogus, right? I sent him an email to say, mate, this cannot be. Please take this serious. This case is invalid, right? And he goes and open up a case, and he sent us that case number. A couple of days, I think about almost three weeks later, saying that, okay, well, you left. We can't take the loss, but you'll have to claim from insurance. As a sign of goodwill, right? We will pay your excess.
As if they're doing you a favor.
That's what I thought. I'm like, mate, as a sign of goodwill, I would love to have my car back.
It's not funny, but what Justice actually told me off air when we were chatting about this case, he says, I told them I gave them a car, not an excess. I want them to give me a car.
My goodness. So all in all, I mean, Justice, I think what had happened is I saw your tweet. And you were just saying you still don't have a finalization. And I said, Wendy, I think this is an interesting case to take on. And the reason I found it so interesting is because a similar incident happened to my aunt in 2008 with her brand new vehicle went in to get something checked and it got stolen. And the police recovered it a few months later. But by then, insurance had sorted her out. And as I'm saying this, I'm realizing the dealership didn't resolve the issue.
No, they passed it straight on to the consumer.
But the insurance went after the dealership. They went after the dealership.
So they should. Why must they pay for the dealership's lack of
negligence?
Exactly, negligence. So how were you feeling at that point? Obviously not good, because that's what prompted you to take to social media, right, Justice?
Yeah, it was quite frustrating, to be honest, because for me it's an easy fix, right? You lost my car with the car keys. Surely you can just replace that. Take responsibility. I mean, if I'm giving you my car with the car keys, I'd expect that you take care as much as I would. But if you don't take care of it, and then you just come back to me to say, sorry, man, but I can help you pay excess. Surely that is, that is quite frustrating.
Yeah. Okay. So I jumped in at that stage. I leapfrogged the dealership and approached Hyundai South Africa directly, as I usually do in these cases, because the manufacturers care deeply about their brands. Reputations, and that's usually the most effective route for me to take. So I made the following comments based on what Justice had told me. I said his keys appear to have been available to anyone who walked in off the streets rather than being locked away until the client arrived to take possession of his vehicle. The thief was not made to produce any documentation proving that he was the owner of the car. He just left, by the way. We didn't say that part. He was asked to produce a driver's license. Said he didn't have one. So the security guard took a photo, which hopefully has proved helpful to the police, but that's all that happened, and then opened the boom and off he went. I said, given how rife the theft of vehicles from dealerships is, I've personally reported many cases over the years. I said, it is inexcusable for dealerships not to have very stringent anti-theft measures in place. As for the dealership pointing justice to a clause in their T's and C's indemnifying themselves against the results of any form of negligence on their behalf, I pointed out that the Consumer Protection Act states, and I quote, in the handling, safeguarding, and utilization of any property that's a consumer's property, companies must exercise the degree of care, diligence, and skill that can reasonably be expected of a person responsible for managing any property belonging to another person and is liable to the owner of the property for any loss resulting from a failure to do so. So that's pretty clear. And a company can't put a clause in their contracts and say that's now binding. They cannot contract outside of the law. Their contracts have to fall within the scope of any laws that apply. I said insurance is a side issue. The dealership needs to take responsibility for the loss of that car, given its failure to take adequate and appropriate steps to thwart a thief walking into the dealership, taking a set of keys off a salesman's desk and making off with a client's car, and without being able to show any form of authorization from dealership officials or even supply proof of identity. So Hyundai came back to me earlier this week, and then again today when I asked for more details. So this is as much as I got. Hyundai Four Ways, represented by senior personnel, had a cordial and successful meeting with Mr. Mariba on Monday morning, during which meeting the parties reached an amicable resolution. Hyundai Automotive South Africa and Hyundai Four Ways sincerely apologized for the inconvenience and stress caused to him. The delay in reaching this decision by the dealership does not align with our values. Hyundai takes the safety and security of our customers, their vehicles, and our staff extremely seriously. Unfortunately, we operate in a country with a high level of crime and theft in particular. I'd asked them particularly, because I think this is the crucial issue out of this for that dealership and all others. What are you doing about the security protocols that you have to safeguard?
If you know you're in a country with a high level of crime, why are the measures not in place for
already
that?
For years? Anyway, the answer I got to that was the dealership management of Hyundai Four Ways have conducted a thorough investigation in conjunction with their security provider and have already implemented the recommendations. Unfortunately, detailed plans cannot be disclosed for obvious reasons. So, of course,
is the dealership manager still the manager? Is my question.
Well, I think they would have told us that wasn't the case. But of course, I was interested in what is this amicable resolution, and I had to go to justice to get that. I think let's have him tell us what's the deal, justice.
So, justice, they called you in. Did they offer you a special bottle of cognac and then give you the good news? Because
that would have been great. But so what happened is we agreed that they will replace the car, so they will give us a brand new same grand item 2023 car, which they've promised that they've ordered. It should be delivered within the next couple of weeks. And an apology, as Wendy has mentioned, that they really apologize for how this thing turned out, and also a commitment that something like this never happens to myself or anyone on that matter when they have to deal with their dealerships.
So in the meantime, are you telling me you are combering for a taxi waiting for your new car? Or did they give you...
No, fortunately. So we still have the courtesy card that we gave them from the first day when we realized that the car has been stolen. We still have... I was still using that same car.
Wendy.
Good.
Is this for you a fair resolution? Because for me person, and this is a personal thing, I think that it shouldn't have had to take somebody going to social media. So just replacing the car, had it been me, would be insufficient. I'm sure justice from your side, it's like you just want this ordeal over and done with.
Yeah, that is true. I think you're right there. I don't understand how it would have how it got to this point. Surely, in my understanding, this is an easy thing, right? So my worry is going forward, right? Should a person approach social media for them to get this kind of resolution, or is that something that the dealership should know from the get-go that when we have this car, we have a duty of care, we need to take responsibility here, and if there's a loss, then they take that responsibility.
Wendy, what are the key takeouts before we go to the news on this one?
I quickly want to say that I think it is a fair resolution because they not only replaced the car, they were legally obliged to replace like for like, so an 18-month going on 2 years car of the same model. They're replacing it with a brand new car, so he's going to have a car that's worth more. So there is an element of compensation there. So I think that is fair. What the dealership should take out of this is that if they just do the right thing in the first place, the person won't have to make it public. It don't have to then go to from social media to traditional media like us. The takeout, just to quickly finish before news, is that before you hand your car and its keys over to any third party, a dealership, a work panel beaters, whatever, ask them what controls they have in place to protect your car when it's in their possession. You have a right to know. Find out what their protocols are and assess whether they are adequate. Don't hand over your keys until you've asked those questions and got the answers.
And also, don't think that something in a signed contract that says we are not liable is law binding. It's the same as walking in.
Just to quickly finish before news is that before you hand your car and its keys over to any third party, a dealership, a work panel beaters, whatever, ask them what controls they have in place to protect your car when it's in their possession. You have a right to know. Find out what their protocols are and assess whether they are adequate. Don't hand over your keys until you've asked those questions and got their answers.
And also, don't think that something in a signed contract that says we are not liable
is
law
yes,
binding. It's the same as walking into these parking lots that say, doesn't matter what happens to you, we're not liable. If your ceiling falls on me, you are liable. Especially if you are negligent. There are some questions that have come through on the WhatsApp line, which we will pick up straight after Eyewitness News Hints.
702.
Nola knows.
Wendy Nola, we continue and we take everybody's calls on 011-883-0702 in the WhatsApp line 072-702-1702. Now, on the back of our conversation around Hyundai and the case of the missing vehicle, there's some questions that came through on the WhatsApp line. Wendy, the one says, question on the stolen car at the dealership, does the dealership not have surveillance cameras?
Well, that would form part of what you'd expect. There to be, but that's not enough because that just tells you who and when and how. But you know, you really need to have the policies in place around safeguarding keys and around, you know, before a car that doesn't belong to the dealership is allowed to exit. I mean, years ago, the dealership I used to regularly take my car to be serviced. I mean, I'm talking a long time ago, literally. You pay your money for the service, and then the dealer, the service manager, gives you a signed little thing that's built to your name and the ID, the number plate of your car, and his authorization to the security guard that I can leave with my own car. And then you show your ID, checks, and then you go. I mean, simple, for example, but it seems none of that happened here. I mean, that would, and also, I mean, you arrive. We've all had this experience. This is a more modern thing. They scan your driver's license when you're going in. What is the point of that? It's not going to be any check when the car comes out again. Do you know what I'm saying? Justice did tell me that did happen. He did have both his disc on his car, his car license, and his driver's license scanned when he drove in. And yet this dude, what was asked for his driver's license, didn't have it. So they took a photo and off he drove in a customer's car. So yes, those every dealership needs to have, you know, at least simple checks and balances in place that won't make it that super easy for a thief to waltz in, have a look around, grab some keys, wander around and see which car they're. It's easy enough to do. We've all lost a car in a parking lot, right? You just press the remote and You can easily figure out where your car is by blinking lights or a beep of the remote. Done. I just, you know, I've just covered too many cases, of dealerships making it, just being too lax about these things. And in the climate that we live in, that we can all acknowledge, it's not enough to make the, it's not okay. It's totally irresponsible and negligent.
And there's some tweets coming in on this. Truth says the worst thing out of this whole thing is that if Justice did claim from insurance, his record of claim would drive up his risk rating and will for a long time mean higher premiums. Joe says, I suggest that when you go to the dealer and hand over the keys, record that conversation of the measures the dealer has in place for the safety of your car. I like that.
Record conversations.
Then Truth now is asking a question, not the same type of question, but they're saying, talking about dodgy car retailers, I sold a car via one of these car selling platforms, and through Tracker, I have evidence that they reduced mileage by a whopping 70,000 kilometers. Now, how do I report them?
Tell me about it. It's called a haircut in the industry.
Oh, really?
It's not an it's a haircut, yes, when they turn the mileage back. It's very difficult to do in newer cars. So that's I would very much appreciate an email about that with the evidence. Good story.
Okay, I will good definitely share your details there on that tweet to Truth, and then we've got a voice note.
Good afternoon, Wendy and Relebo Khile. Quick question. My story is similar, right? But the only difference is that the workshop that I took the car to turns out to be a bogus one. I've opened a criminal case at the police station, but the police do not want to investigate the case, claiming that this is a civil case and I should go to a civil court to get this thing done. Is there a way that I can get around this? I mean, I don't have, you know, obviously it's more than 20,000 rand, so I can't go to a small claims court. So I don't have money for lawyers and attorneys and stuff like that. Is there a way that I can get the company and the ID number of the dealership to be on the radar rather than my plate numbers? Because let's face it, this car's already been stripped. I don't want an APB on the plate numbers. I want an APB on his ID number, if that makes sense. Looking forward to your answer.
Oh, Wendy.
That's a biggie. He didn't specifically say it. He says something similar happened, but it was a bogus dealership, and it's not enough info for me to kind of comment fully. But first of all, it's not a civil case if you take your car to a dealership, bogus or not, to somebody, some service provider, and then the car is stolen. I mean, that is theft. Whoever was responsible, that is a case of theft. So they shouldn't have turned that down. I hear you're about small claims court. The limit there is 20,000 rand.
Also, you shouldn't have to go that route. Like, it's a criminal offense, full stop.
It's exactly. So that's mystifying. But I often hear reports where SAPs have said, have turned people away and said it's not a crime when it is. Even fraud or theft by false pretenses, they should be opening those cases. I would need to get an email with the full story there on what happened. What do you mean bogus? Did he unwittingly hand his car over to a private person who then, I mean, could have staged a theft or whatever? I need to hear the details. So if that whoever left that voice note, if you have the energy to email me and set out the full circumstances, I'll certainly be willing to give you some advice.
Thank you so much for that voice note. And thank you to you, Wendy, for that info. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we touch on the batteries and then we take your calls.
Her knowledge is your power.
13 minutes to 3 o'clock. We take your calls on 011-883-0702 and the WhatsApp line 072-702-1702. We're still with Wendy Nolan, our consumer rights feature. Before we jump to the lines, Wendy, let's talk about these flat coin batteries that are terribly unsafe for children.
They are. I got an email just today about this, Rilbekele, so I thought I'd share it because it hadn't occurred to me. My children have grown up, but it hadn't occurred to me quite how dangerous these things could be. So Duracell, as I said this morning, issued a warning about the danger of those small, round, flat lithium coin batteries is the official name, that they pose to children. And increasingly so, because they are now in more and more things, from fitness trackers and luggage scales to garage openers and TV remotes. And obviously, when swallowed by a child, they can do a lot of damage. And they're pretty attractive to a child, if you think about it, like this shiny little round, smooth coin. So the company has joined forces with the European Academy of Pediatrics, and this is a global initiative, to launch a campaign to drive awareness about the dangers of these little batteries. And you can understand why, because the number of serious child ingestion accidents is on the rise. Since 2002, an estimated total of 10,000 cases. It's risen dramatically from 2002 to the state where there were 10,000 cases in 2020, and more than half of them in Europe. I think, you know, around the rest of the world, they just aren't documented as much. Where do you find them? Long list of things: digital measuring cups, digital scales and luggage scales, as I said, digital thermometers, GPS trackers, fitness trackers, heart rate monitors, key fobs, pet monitors, small toys, lighting devices. Think about those flameless candles that are all the rage. Bike lamps, smoke detectors, smartwatches, TV remotes, wireless headphones, wireless doorbells, motion sensors, etc. So what happens? What danger do they pose if a child swallows one, gets stuck in the esophagus? It's a big problem. The saliva can... Listen to this. This child's saliva may close an electrical circuit, leading to the battery releasing its current, damaging the surrounding tissue.
They can get burnt, basically, as well.
Exactly. The perforation of the esophagus, it can burn right through. Imagine. But the part about saliva completing the circuit just alarmed and fascinated me. If not detected and treated early enough, internal bleeding and serious infections may occur, potentially leading to child death. So this is a very serious potential risk. And the message is, do not leave them lying around. And if you suspect that a child has swallowed one of these little coin batteries, take them to the emergency room as soon as possible, and don't hesitate to call an emergency ambulance, because time is critical in these cases.
It could possibly, like you say, perforate through their stomach or digestive system.
Burn through.
Yeah. Thank you so much for that warning, Wendy. Let us quickly now go to the line. Sylvia in Cradle of Humankind. Hi.
Hello. Yes. Sylvia, Cradle of Humankind. Wendy's busy. Quickly, we have a little guest house. We bought a new washing machine from Macro on the West Rand. They delivered it, or we brought it home. We noticed on the first wash that it had a mark in the inside of the drum. We sent them a mail. We told them that. We sent them many mails. They didn't respond. Eventually, after probing them, they did send their guy out. He came to have a look. The response was, we'll send a painter to just patch it. We said, no, it's marking our linen. We have white linen. We cannot. Please, we need a new machine. We send them emails. I actually have sent you about 3 or 4 emails the same.
Oh, but oops, I know you're so busy. Sorry.
And we understand. We just desperate. Macro just don't respond to us. What do you do? Nearly 20,000.
Wow. Okay. And most importantly, Sylvia, when did you purchase this washing machine?
I think it was about end of October last year, November, and it's been going on all the time. There's a paper trail.
Okay, and you reported it. Okay, so you have a 6-month warranty, thanks to the Consumer Protection Act. Did you buy it in a company name?
Yes.
Okay, so the CPA, if your turnover is not less than $2 million a year, then you don't have the protection of the Consumer Protection Act. That's a big warning. I get this from people who buy printers and other things.
I didn't know
business
that.
Account, and then Yeah. Then they come back and say, oh, no, yes, there is a problem, but you aren't protected by the Consumer Protection Act, so we're not, you can't get a refund or whatever, but you still would have recourse under a normal warranty. The fact that it's marking the clothes, though, is very material. It's a new product, business or no business. Sylvia, I'll do a search for your name and a keyword or two and find it, and we'll send it on to MassSmart. I'm sure the higher apps would be willing to sort this out for you. Sometimes with these huge companies, you know, what happens on the ground isn't ideal. But I'll definitely find your email and pass it on. You shouldn't have to accept a new machine marking your white linen. That's ridiculous.
Thank you so much, Sylvia. So what we will do, we will make sure that Wendy has that information. And thank you for understanding that Wendy is super busy. Outside of the many other jobs that she's doing as a journalist, this is something that she does in her free time. So please do be patient and send reminders as well, so that she's able to take on some of your cases. Ntabi Singh in Reimsig, go ahead.
Hi, Rilebogile. So what happened was I ordered my baby's formula on the Checkers app yesterday. And she's allergic to soy and cow's milk and eggs. So she drinks a specific formula. So when I got home last night, I realized that they have actually delivered an alternative called Novalec. She started having hives, you know, itching, and then we gave her the antihistamine. And this morning I called, and then I went to the shop, you know, because I was curious as to how they decide to change the formula that I give to my child. Who gives them the authority to do so? And they told me that their app is designed that way, that if you don't have the product that you have ordered, they can give you an alternative. And I just told them that that's endangering babies' lives, because she has allergies, and deciding to give whatever because you don't have the one that I have. So I just want to ask Wendy, what is our recourse in such a situation? Yes, they try to give us, you know, a 300-rand voucher, but I just believe that, you know, this is serious, because imagine many parents going through this and it becomes their life, you know, in danger problem.
Can I ask a question, Ntabi Singh? Just with regards, because we touched on this last week, I had a similar situation to yours, except it was an allergy. It was the wrong type of formula, as in the wrong age group. So we didn't touch it and it sat there.
That's
now,
right.
One of the things that Wendy mentioned was, because on the app, you know, on the Checkers 60 app, you can search there under alternatives. Now, I am of the view that there are certain products that should not even have an option of an alternative, because they are that specific. However, have you set your settings in such a way that for that formula, it must say you don't want an alternative?
I didn't know absolutely about that at all. However, what I said to them was that you can't force a product to me. I specifically asked for a second product. And if you don't have it, call or, you know, and tell me that you don't have it and refund me my money back.
So now my
Yes. You know, and they gave us the 300-rand voucher, as you know, to apologize, but I believe that it's not enough.
Look, it's tricky, Ntabi Singh, on the one hand, because the measures are there. And on the other hand, it's also tricky because the argument which Wendy shared with us was that they could be the thinking of, well, if we don't send any formula, a child could go hungry. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Sorry,
Ntabi Singh, you are cutting. So let's do this. Wendy, is there a way that when we pick up this conversation next week, we can find out if there are certain, because I understand both sides. On the side of Checkers, I understand that what if they don't share any alternative and then the person is unhappy? Again, maybe it's a matter of adjusting the app in such a way that it's easier to see the part about the selecting of no alternative.
Sorry if I'm going to make myself unpopular here, but I have gone into this on my own and with Checkers very, very carefully about this issue of substitutes. And I use the app myself on a weekly basis. It is very clear, and it pops up in two places where you have the choice. It actually keeps reminding you of saying, I don't want an alternative. And I do that with most of the products that I select because I don't want them to give me an alternative. It's very in your face and hard to miss. So I think the app does enough, frankly, to give you that choice of them not choosing one for you. And secondly, I don't know if I've missed something, but I've had two babies on formula from a certain age. You know the formula that your child uses. So if they deliver the wrong one, how do you then give it to your child? I don't know if I missed something there, if it's got very similar labeling or something. But if your child is highly allergic and you know the product that you is the only product that you can give your child, how do you, even if the wrong product was delivered, how do you then give that product to your child? I'm sorry if I missed something, but there is responsibility on both sides.
Yes, unfortunately, there isn't enough time to delve into those questions, so we'll have to leave it for next time.